Esse podcast é produzido por Abrace.digital.
Olá, pessoal, tudo bem? Olha, eu tô aqui extremamente feliz e agradecido de poder trazer Alficon para conversar com a gente sobre técnicas de controle, por que elas não funcionam, sobre como a gente pode mudar e focar a nossa relação com os nossos filhos em algo que seja mais construtivo a longo prazo. Então, eu estou aqui fazendo essa introdução muito breve, não quero prender vocês aqui. Caso você não conheça, Alficon é um dos nomes mais importantes dentro desse mundo da parentalidade. Ele já publicou 14 livros e fala para o mundo inteiro sobre comportamento, relacionamento, parentalidade em geral. E ele traz uma visão que traz críticas baseadas em evidência, em estudo, em vivências práticas. Ele é pai de dois, né? Então ele tem vivência prática nisso. E além disso, ele já escreveu centenas de artigos sobre todas essas questões. Então, convido vocês para ouvir um pouco mais desse cara que é tão incrível, que é o Alficon. Welcome, Alficon. I'm so pleased to have you here in my channel, and I truly believe that your words, your work really impact a lot of families around the world, and especially here in Brazil, we have so many people needing to hear the things you say normally. So I'm a huge fan of your work for a long time already, and your first book that I've read was Unconditional Parenting, and it really blew my mind at the time. So the first thing I wanted to ask you, I think that's a lot of questions that people ask me along those years, and it is related to control. Why controlling kids or getting to know controlling techniques are necessarily a bad thing, and why should we move away from that?
Because human beings have a need to feel a sense of autonomy, to have some say over what happens to us. That's built into what we all need. To different degrees and in different circumstances, but basically we need to feel a sense of self-determination, as if we are, as one researcher put it, more like origins in our lives rather than like pawns. So when we attempt to control others, even children, we are interfering with and attempting to squelch that basic human need. And it's particularly sad in the case of children, because this is the time when they're coming to be human beings, when their need for healthy development, for flourishing, depends in part on not having someone else control them. That doesn't mean that parents simply let go of kids, let them do what they want, that it's a hands-off matter. That's a false dichotomy. We need to be present with them to offer guidance and structure to meet their various needs and to help them grow into healthy people. But that also depends not only on the structure that we do offer, but on the control that we don't. And many parents, and for that matter, many teachers and many managers in the workplace, are working out their own psychological problems and lack of healthy autonomy by attempting to interfere with the autonomy of others. So I would summarize it this way. Children learn how to make good decisions by making decisions, not by following directions.
That is absolutely perfect. And I think most parents actually get confused in this area. Mostly because if you use those controlling techniques with younger kids, it actually works on the short term, right? But it suddenly stops working, and people think that they need to be a little more harsh on the consequences, right? I mean, and I'm quoting consequences because it's not really logical consequences. So I'd like to hear more about what you think of the effectiveness of controlling techniques such as punishment, rewards, and stuff like that.
Control can only be, as you say, effective in the very short run at getting one thing, which is temporary compliance. and it gets that at an enormous cost. But often we can't even get that. I mean, you can't make a child stop crying or go to sleep, no matter what kind of control you use. You can't make a child respect you, only fear you. And the more you try at this, even the things you think you can get, like making a toddler pee here rather than there, or making a child go to bed even if you can't make her go to sleep, or making a child obey you for now, comes first of all at a huge cost to your relationship, because now the child sees you as someone to be feared or someone to be obeyed for the time being. But you are an enforcer to be avoided rather than a caring ally in the child's mind. And you can't make the child see you differently. And the more you rely on force, on power, on control, the worse things tend to get. And of course, the most destructive version of all of this is using physical force on a child, hitting, spanking, slapping, doing violence to a child, and doing it in the name of love is a powerful way to screw up a child for life, by having that child confuse love with violence. And children often in such households grow up then to abuse in the name of love, and for the best reasons, of course, their own children and possibly other people in their lives. Now, sometimes power expresses itself or control with simple coercion, simply forcing a child to do this or stop doing that. Other times it takes the two forms that you mentioned. One is punishment, where you say to a child, do this, or I'm going to deliberately make you unhappy in some way, in the hope of, you know, helping you to become a better person, which never works. And I want to emphasize, the research finds that punishment is counterproductive, does harm, not just ineffective, regardless of whether we use euphemisms like logical consequences, regardless of what schedule or types of punishments we apply. Making a child unhappy can be done in various ways short of physical force. When you say to kids, do this, or here's what I'm going to do to you, the question they come to ask is, what do they, the people with the power, want me to do? And what happens to me if I don't do it? That is an excellent way to make children more self-centered, to be less developed ethically, because their focus is on pure self-interest, not on how their actions affect others. And the other major strategy by which power is used, and this is more surprising to a lot of people, is rewards. Instead of saying, do this, or here's what I'm going to do to you, we say to kids, do this, and you'll get that. Now the question the child comes to ask is, what do they want me to do, and what do I get for doing it? Again, the focus is purely on self-interest, which may be why research finds that children who are frequently rewarded or praised are less caring and generous than other children. And you'll notice how similar the two statements sound, because basically, rewards and punishments are two sides of the same coin. They're both ways of doing things to children rather than working with children. And in my book, Unconditional Parenting, I try to describe that important shift away from all punishments, regardless of what they're called, and not just physical punishment, and away from rewards toward a more working with approach, where children learn that we accept and love them for who they are, not for what they do. Because a central feature of bribes and threats is that they offer conditional acceptance. I love you, I care about you, I give you attention, approval, acknowledgement, only when you please me or impress me. And that is the opposite of what children need. We have to help them understand that we love them even when they screw up or when they fall short. And that requires a lot more of us than on the one hand, sitting back and letting them do stuff, whatever they want on their own, or the sort of doing to approach that's based on power and control.
Hearing you say that makes me feel more confident in still treating my kids the way I do now. Because it is really challenging. We're not talking about things that are easy to implement. I mean, being emotionally available, investing time and effort in building a secure attachment to your kids is not an easy thing. It's much easier to just yell at the kid and make her, you know, do the things you want them to do by fear or by some golden stars or, you know, little toys. This is the most rewarding thing to do with our kids because it is what will make, on the long term, a happier kid, in a more self-confident kid, right?
In fact, I often begin my presentations, my lectures, workshops, by asking people, what are your long-term goals for your children? How would you like them to turn out years from now? What would you like them to be like? And I ask people to come up with a word or a phrase that captures an objective. I would really like my child to be blank. And wherever I go, and I've done this all over the world, I get the same kinds of answers. You know, I want my child to be happy, to be ethical, to be independent and self-confident, but also to be caring and compassionate, to be curious, creative, you know, lifelong learners. You know, I hear these things all over the place. And what I do for a living is I say to people, you say you want this, so why are you doing that? Mm-hmm. Because the unconditional support, the absence of any kind of reward or punishment, and the presence of supporting kids' autonomy, giving them the respect and guidance, mutual problem solving, all the rest of that stuff. This is not just something that I or you say is something we like. This, according to good research, is what is more likely to help our children grow into the kind of people that we say, that you say, you know, this is what I'd like.
The next question that I get asked a lot is, mm-hmm. Okay, people, when they realize that this is really a big deal, and they say, okay, how do we actually move away from punishment and rewards into doing something practical? How do I get my kids to go to sleep or to take a bath? So do you have any, you know, quick tips for people to actually start getting this wheel spinning?
Well, there is no recipe here. There is no simple one-size-fits-all answer. As you yourself pointed out, one of the reasons that punishments and rewards continued to be the dominant way of treating children, despite practical and research-based evidence that they fail, and the more you use them out of desperation, the more spectacularly they fail. The reason they persist is because they're easy. It doesn't ask us to be thoughtful. It doesn't take much time or care or courage to say to kids, do this or I'm going to hurt you. Or conversely, if you do what I want, you know, I'll give you a doggy biscuit for it. Or say, good job, which is just a verbal doggy biscuit. So the second half of my book is all about the what to do part rather than the what not to do. But it doesn't consist, I must warn folks, of a simple recipe. And when people email me to say, my child is doing this, what do? I say, beyond the general guidelines and principles that I've written about, I can't give you an answer because I haven't met you or your child and don't know enough about the specific situation. All I can offer are generalities like these. First, sometimes when kids don't do what we want, the problem is not with the kid, it's with what we want. That's why the working with approach, I say, takes some courage, because we have to begin by asking, is the request reasonable? Is it developmentally appropriate? How do I get my kid to clean up his room? It's filthy. Well, I'm not going to give you a better technique for that. I'm going to start by inviting you to ask whether the request was reasonable. If it's your kid's room, the only place on the planet that belongs to her, why should it have to be kept up to your standards? How do I get my kid to eat this vegetable, you know, if I don't bribe her with dessert, you know? And The answer is, if you are providing mostly nourishing, nutritious foods, I don't think there's ever a single food you would have to force kids to eat. And I don't think you should either, because it screws up your relationship with them and their attitude toward healthy eating, because it's now a matter of control. There are some things that are important. And I know, as the father of two children, that you're not thinking about grand theories about autonomy, you know, when you just want to get your kid into or out of the bed or the bathtub or the car or whatever. But mostly, I think we need to do a lot less telling and a lot more asking. To figure out how things look from the child's point of view, and then to figure out together how to do it. To give kids more say about it in a way that's developmentally appropriate. You don't give the same kind of choices to a 2-year-old that you give to a 12-year-old, of course. But even for a 2-year-old, it can be, you know, do you want to have this to eat today or that? Do you want to have your whale placemat or your dinosaur placemat? Do you want to use your orange toothbrush or your green toothbrush? And gradually, you give kids more say, and you don't just have them choose from an adult-constructed menu of options, but allow them to construct possibilities too. And when things go wrong, you've got to swallow your desire to just say, the goal is to get my kid to do what I want, and instead to back up and say, let me think about those long-term goals again. Which is the best way to respond to this meltdown that my kid is having right now that tomorrow and next year are likely to help him feel empowered and confident and caring and still connected to me in a way that, and by the way, rewarding kids doesn't create a caring alliance either. Now, instead of becoming an enforcer to be avoided, you've become a goody dispenser on legs. And that's not the kind of relationship that we want to promote either. So I give some concrete examples, including a couple with my own children in the book, but I'm not telling people, when your kid does this, you should stand here and say the following in this tone of voice. Because books that do that, I think, are disrespectful to both children and parents. All I can do is offer the general kind of considerations along with some illustrative examples and then invite parents who find this reasonable, plausible, to then adopt those principles to the very specific situations that their own children find themselves in.
I'd like to point out, if you are watching this and you're kind of confused, still confused, just read the book, read Unconditional Parenting. And I'd like to point out another great book of yours, which is Punished by Rewards. And it's a great, great book to read. And the moment you make this shift, right, of thinking the long-term goals and thinking about the relationship you're building with the kids, things tend to get a little bit easier to go. You know, kids start to be more cooperative when you start making requests and ask for help and not demanding they do what you told, they don't told them. So I don't want to take much of a time here, and I'm just so pleased, so honored to have this conversation with you. I'd like to leave you with your final words if you want to talk something with everybody who is listening right now to you.
All of us want the best for our kids. If we sometimes find ourselves resorting to punishments and rewards and other forms of control, it's not because we're bad people. It's not because we don't love our children and want the best for them. It's because we run out of patience, or we run out of ideas, or we're overwhelmed by the push in that direction and the society we live in, which tends to be more forgiving of control and more suspicious of treating kids with respect, and assuming that means we're permissive, which is not at all the same thing and not what I'm promoting. So if you're lucky enough to have a co-parent, you know, read a book or an article or watch a video or think about these issues together and make a pact to try to catch each other and talk about how we can together become better parents. And if your child is old enough, bring the child in on it.
You know, apologize if you did something that was too controlling or thoughtless, which is a powerful example to set for children that says, I value our connection more than I value control over you, which suggests I must never admit to having made a mistake or being in doubt. You know, and if there are times with an older child when you don't know what to do, admit that and say, I need your help. What can we do? What do you think makes sense so we can solve this problem together? That attitude models something for children that they may take with them into their own relationships, but it also, apart from how you solve that particular problem, does something more powerful, which is to express trust in your child and respect for your child, which helps them to feel unconditionally supported and loved, and is much more likely to lead to kids who are happy and ethical and independent and caring and all the things we want for them. And don't be too frustrated or slide back into familiar doing to strategies when things go bad sometimes, which they definitely will. Remember to keep your eye on the big picture and the need to do something that's more in line with what really will help kids in the long term. Good luck to all of us as parents.
Yeah, right. If you want to get to know more of Mr. Alfie Kahn's work, I strongly suggest you to hit his site. It's alfiekahn.org, and I'll leave the link in the description. And you can see many, many articles there and all of his books that he has ever written. So it is a great source of good information for us to, you know, to create meaningful relationship with our kids.
Thanks so much for your interest.
Thank you very much. Have a great day. Whew. Gostou, né? Eu tô aqui sem reação. Eu tô muito emocionado porque para mim isso é uma conquista na vida, sabe? De tudo que eu já venho fazendo ao longo desses anos inteiros, falando sobre parentalidade, sobre como criar filhos de uma forma mais respeitosa. E eu consegui chegar aqui e ter essa conversa com o Alfie Kahn, que é um dos caras que eu mais admiro dentro desse mundo. É emocionante demais. Eu tô aqui suando minha camisa, mas eu tô muito feliz. Eu espero de verdade que você tenha gostado disso. Eu gostaria muito de poder trazer mais das pessoas que eu admiro, que me ajudaram a construir todo esse conhecimento que eu tenho hoje aqui, que eu boto em prática com os meus filhos, e compartilhar isso com vocês. Então torçam por mim, ajudem a espalhar esse vídeo por aí, façam com que esse vídeo chegue em cada vez mais pessoas, para a gente conseguir trazer mais pessoas incríveis que me ajudaram a construir todo esse conhecimento e essa experiência linda sobre um olhar mais empático e mais respeitoso para a infância, tá bom? Então espero que vocês tenham gostado. Não se esqueçam, curtam, comentem, compartilhem, se inscrevam no meu canal, acessem o site do Alfie Kahn, que é um site que por si só já tem muita informação bacana lá, tá bom? E é isso, eu não sei nem mais o que falar, tá bom? Eu só tô ainda me recuperando de toda essa emoção. Um beijo, até a próxima, tchau, tchau.
Gostou desse podcast? Escute também os outros podcasts da família Paizinho Vírgula sobre parentalidade e infância. Tem o Tricô de Paz, Café com as Pediatras, Afropai, Tamo Junto, Sinuca de Bicos e também os podcasts infantis Coisa de Criança, Conta Pra Mim e Ideia de Criança.